Last Sabbath, we began a new series into Chapter 2 of the book, The Prophesied End Time. Today is Part 2 of this new series. It has the same title as Chapter 2, obviously, The Seventh Seal. But today is The Seventh Seal, Part 2. We're going to continue where we left off last week, except we're going to back up just a little bit, a couple of paragraphs, to the section entitled Power Given to Two Witnesses, or Power Given to Two Witnesses. And I'm going to do quite a bit of reading here, but brethren, again, you need this in your mind as to where we're going, what's taking place. You need it deeply embedded in your mind, and sometimes we can read something, but by going through a sermon like this, hearing it, discussing a little bit here and there, we're going to be able to have it more deeply embedded in our minds. And quite candidly, as I go through it, I know it's for me as well, but I need this stuff more deeply embedded in my mind because of where we're going and what we're doing, and even though I wrote it, it still needs to be firmly embedded in my mind. I remember one of the training sessions down there at Phoenix and Austin where we went through that, or the only training session, I guess. And they talk about how important it was, even for authors, when they talk about their own book, to go back and read their book, to have it freshly in their minds. Even though you wrote it, it's good to keep up and keep refreshed in those things and what's written there. And how much more something like this having to do with prophecy, having to do with the end of an age. So, again, we all need it in our minds. There are going to be people who are going to be able to help that we can't even begin to comprehend right now. The day is going to come when you're going to have those opportunities of sharing these things with others, and you're going to be put on that spot in a very great way. And we really have no concept of some of the things that are awaiting us, brethren. Anyway, backing up here a little bit, power given the two witnesses. Even though these prophesied events may seem too far-fetched for you to believe at the time you read this, consider it all, because not too long from now, it will become very real to you when these things come to pass. You are now being informed, and this is page 39, you are now being informed and can begin preparing for what is ahead. Disregard it now, if you will, but wait and watch for these two witnesses to come on the scene. So this is in the context of the two witnesses. And people, brother, it is awesome how incredibly hard it is for the human mind to just accept what God says. The human mind will not accept what God says, especially in the kind of confusing world we have today, because so many people are saying so many things. I think about the church that's scattered. Look at all the different things being taught. I don't know what the number, I don't know if they're keeping track anymore, if they can keep track of how many splinter groups. I still hear of different ones splintering off from some of the main groups, some from some of the smaller groups. And people go out and start, as we did, a different organization. Everyone believing they're doing the right thing. And not everyone can be doing the right thing. There's only one that can be right. And that's what everybody has to be convicted of in their own heart and mind and act accordingly. And that could put you to a great test, obviously. And it does. It puts you to that test. It's put us to the test. Put me to the test. And we act accordingly then. So it's a very unique time we're in. But it's amazing to me as I go through, and we talk about this in Chapter 2 even today here, and going through this and talking about two witnesses and what they're going to do, how stubborn the world is going to be. They don't want to accept that it's coming from God. They'll make every kind of excuse possible. Even here in this country, when some things happen, when certain things will happen in the weather, or various catastrophic events happen just on a physical plane, as far as perhaps earthquakes or whatever it might be, they're going to have reasons and excuses of why it's happening that way, that it's not from God, that it's something, they'll have some scientific reason, but they won't consider God. They truly won't. And we live in that kind of a time where people fight against and resist God, all the more so nowadays. So again here, this is encouraging people, brethren, to wait and watch and listen and learn. And if you know these things in advance, if you hear about two individuals going to come on the scene and things begin to happen, then brethren, that should be a prod, a help to them, to help them to come to a deep conviction that this has to be of God. No one could tell these things like this, and they'd be exactly as they happen, as they take place. So going on the book, their work will not be done in a corner, but will be seen by the entire world. However, it will not be accepted as being from God. When the two witnesses begin to tell the world that the time of the end has come, they'll have greater power to back up their words. What they say comes from God. For only God can perform what they prophesy. They will be informing the world that mankind has come to the end of 6,000 years of self-rule. The world will be told that 6,000 years was given to mankind to ultimately prove that man can exercise every kind of government, economic system, religious belief, family structure, educational model, and all of them would fail, as indeed all have failed. Nothing man does can produce true freedom, continuing peace, lasting happiness, prosperity, and fullness of life. And sometimes that's hard for God's own people to believe that, to know that. That this nation is not what it's all about. This nation has never been what it's all about, not even in its beginning. Sometimes there are some who have that concept and idea. This nation has never been right with God. We've been closer to God in the sense of, well, I can't even say that. We've been closer to a resemblance of some who have held to certain basic truths or basic beliefs, but was this country observing the Sabbath of the holy days? Was this country of God? No, God performed the promise that he gave to Abraham a long time ago and to others as well about what would happen at the end of an age, about his blessings to Manasseh and his blessings to Ephraim and his blessings to Israel that he would perform at the end of an age, especially in this country. It's not because we're great. It's not because our forefathers were great, because they weren't. You know, sometimes we think they were. You know, some of them had wretched lives. Their lifestyles were wrong. And sometimes we uphold them as being great leaders for this world, as far as what this world has to offer. There were some that were better than others, obviously. But they're not what God desires in man. They did not yield themselves to the laws and the ways of God. This model of this government is not the model for mankind to follow. There has been no model on the earth that man has faithfully followed. The closest that you can come to, and that was not done well, was by the Israelites. You can look at the life of David as a king. It was not a good model, but it was some of the best that man has ever had, of a man who was after God's own heart. But he had his battles and the things he went through, and his nation suffered because of it. The people suffered because of that. People weren't living right at that time. It wasn't a righteous world at that time. We tend to think, as we read through some of those things in the Old Testament, that they were. There were those at times, brother, who poured themselves out as the best that physical people could do, who did not have God's Spirit dwelling in them, but they were not the church. There were certain ones that God worked with, including David, that God worked with on a personal basis, who were able to change their lives, who were blessed to be able to be a part of something that God was going to do later on in resurrecting them, because they were intended to be in the training they went through to be a part of 144,000. But the overwhelming majority of all those that they ruled and worked with were not. Different prophets and so forth. So there are things in this country sometimes that we uphold are pretty good. They're not pretty good out here. They really aren't. When you begin to truly look at them and truly look at this life and what man has to offer and what this nation has to offer, it isn't good. It's filled with, the more frankly God helps us to zero in on some of these things, the more I see, and I hope we all see, the hypocrisy of what's out here. It's amazing here, brother. And talking about some of these kinds of things, I think about some of the interviews. And who would have thought we'd have come to a time when we speak so plainly, so clearly about what's coming, and God giving us the means to accomplish that. It's an awesome thing, brother, and sometimes we really don't grasp how awesome it is. To grasp that we're going to have the ability in a more powerful way to do some of the same things when you listen to the interviews on radio, to talk about a 6,000-year plan, to talk about Mr. Armstrong with the Elijah to come and the world rejected him, to be able to talk about some of those kinds of things, to let them know that we're at the end of 6,000 years, that Jesus Christ is coming back, that the kingdom of God is coming back. I didn't even intend in the very beginning to talk about repentance. But you know what? Because of the questions asked out there, and people want to know, well, what can I do? It's the only answer you can give them. It's the age-old thing, 6,000 years of it. You want help? You want help to go through all this? It's going to happen no matter what people do. No nation can turn it around. No group of people can turn it around, because man will not listen. We've already proven that. The answer is you have to repent. You have to know what to repent of. You have to begin turning toward the Sabbath and toward the holy days. Do real good for all of you who have the ability, before we finally make another tape of it, to go back and listen to that, to one of the new interviews just posted on KIRO, Cairo Radio, up in Seattle, Washington. And some of the attitudes and some of the things that came out in that interview, pretty strong stuff. And, you know, it's going to get a whole lot stronger before we're through all this. But who would have believed a year ago, or 2 years ago, or 7 years ago, that we would ever be at a point like this and these same kind of things taking place? I wouldn't have believed it. I really wouldn't have. It didn't cross my mind. The ways of mankind are a failure because man has rejected the one and only way that will produce the positive results he has long desired, God's way. Since Adam and Eve, mankind has gone his own way, even in his religious beliefs, which he represents as being from God. Man is deceived and self-deluded, willingly so. So is it any wonder that the world will hate the message brought by those two witnesses, or these two witnesses, who will claim that their end-time message comes from the great Creator God? Even during the last century, mankind has witnessed an age of incredible technology, an explosion of knowledge never before experienced in all Earth's history. Yet these things have not helped mankind to solve his problems or bring the world peace, this world peace. The League of Nations and now the United Nations are testimony to this truth, that mankind cannot solve his own problems and cannot bring peace to the earth. We look outward as a nation, toward other nations, toward those that have greater problems, that they need to adopt our way. What about our problems? And we don't even address them. We are so hypocritical. We truly are. And that message is not going to be popular as things happen, as things go along, brethren. We are a hypocritical people. We truly are. And we look to others. We look toward Iran and Afghanistan and so forth. And we don't look at resolving our own problems that fester as a people, as a nation. We truly don't. We'll just interject here in this part of the book. I hope we see the hypocrisy that's so prevalent in nations, including ours, including this one here in the United States. You know, we sensationalize war and our efforts in Afghanistan and Iraq. We really do. It's sensationalized in the news. There are people who think it's a noble thing. They join the military because they see that emphasis put on there, because they feel it's a noble thing. It's built up to be something great. War is not great. Fighting is not great, like what's taking place over there. And so we tell other nations they ought to do what we do, just like what happened when Arafat died. What do we start doing immediately? The United States and Great Britain get together, and we have the answers for what they need to do, what the Palestinians need to do now. You think, what a joke. Let's call it what it is. It's an absolute joke. Nobody can bring peace to the Middle East. No one can bring peace to the Palestinians. They can't even agree among themselves. And they definitely are never going to agree with Israel. And Israel's never going to agree with them. They have two different religious ideas at work there. And they clash. One wants to see the destruction of the other. They do not believe. Israel does not believe in any fashion or form that Islam is right. Islam does not believe in any fashion or form that Judaism is right. They don't agree. And neither does Christianity believe either one of them are right. But we have such big hearts, don't we? And we're willing to tolerate different religious people and so forth. I'll tell you what, it's our downfall. It's the downfall of this country. It's one of the things that's going to be a downfall. It works into the scheme of things. If people really believe what they believe, it shows hypocrisy even there, but they don't really believe it. We tend to justify the loss of life for noble good for all mankind, of all mankind. We truly do. So people die because our cause is great, because our cause is so good, and we don't even know what we're doing over there. We're actually giving, you know, brethren, it fits into prophecy. We're giving them the ability to spread their word. We're giving them that ability. This is not a small movement. It's growing and it's getting more powerful. The more we stir it up, just what we have just taken care of in one city, and we're taking to another city today. They moved it, the battalion over to another one now. We're stirring up things, and we have no idea how it's going to come back and bite us. Because we have to learn a lesson of pride. We're going to be humbled by it all before it's all over with. What a prophecy. It's going to come from that part of the world, too. And so they're going to gain strength, and they're going to gain a determination to put an end to us, to attack us, to destroy us before it's over with. We're going to become a greater enemy than Israel, the United States is, as far as they're concerned, in their mind and their being. So we do these things, we go about our own way. And so we don't have the means nor the will to do what it would take to bring any kind of peace to that part of the world. We don't, because politics is involved. We don't have the will. We don't have the determination. Nor do we know the right in doing so. too much disagreement. And neither could we do it anyway, even in this world the way it is. We sensationalize just as our news does. Our news, it doesn't matter what station you look at, sensationalize things, make stories, make the news, because we want to look away from our real sickness. That's really deep in our minds. We don't want to really look at. It's not popular to look at. Even though it's mentioned later in the book, and I think it's good we think about some of this, because I don't know if we really understand this. We have horrible abuse in our inner cities. You just want to take a look at one area of life. The lying, the cheating, the things that goes on in large corporations, the advantage that people take of others in the medical profession, in the insurance industry, in banking. I don't care where you look. This country stinks. It truly does. And someone's going to like that. Someone's going to say, hello, are you calling for... No, just telling us what we're like as human beings. Every country is like that, brother. It doesn't matter whether it's this country. It's just that we don't understand it in this country. We think we're the best the world has to offer. Well, God's going to bring it all to an end. The best that the world has to offer goes first. It does. It falls first. And the others who think they're the best fall right behind it. And then there are others who think they're good, too, and really feel they're better. They're going to have some more power given to them. So I think about some of these things, brethren, of what we have. Think about our inner cities. And that's just a bit because it's spread into outer. It doesn't matter where you go. I think of how things are so unsafe today. Rape, robbery, drug dealing, murder are committed every day on a really large scale in this country. There are far more people killed in this country by murder than all the soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan, by far, many times over. I don't know if we understand some of that. Far more people murdered. Amazing. So why aren't we focusing on those things? The abuse we have in our own country. We scream and holler when someone's taken captive, and they get great publicity. And even their heads cut off, whatever it might be, and it's barbaric, it's sick. What about so many innocent people who are killed in this country day after day after day? I think of our highways alone. I think of even our hospitals. What was it, last year, they had this statistic? Some 90,000 people lost their lives in this country because of mistakes made in hospitals by the medical profession. That's a lot of people. Half of that nearly are killing our highways every year, and half of those that are killing our highways are killed because of drugs and alcohol related, accidents. Hypocrisy. We're just now getting to the point down there, and some are screaming and hollering down in Ohio where whether it's a red or yellow tag, depending on the license plate, some are going to have to start, having on their cars, and people are screaming and hollering about that. How dare you put something like that on a vehicle of an individual who's been convicted of DWI, or DWI, what do you want to call it, driving while intoxicated, driving under the influence, many times. Sooner or later, they take someone's life because they drive like that, because of their driving, innocent children. Where's the outrage? I'm so sick of this kind of stuff, brother. I truly desire God's kingdom to come because we have tolerated this kind of thing for so long, and we're such a hypocrite. We're such hypocrisy, and we don't even understand that. Sometimes in the church we battle in being able to understand that. Continuing on the last sentence, page 39. Again, this increase in knowledge and rapid development of technology has been withheld from mankind until the very end of 6,000 years that God allowed him to rule. God restricted mankind from such technology and knowledge until this end time, because if he had not done so, man would have destroyed himself from off the face of the earth long ago. We are now at a time when God must intervene before the growth of technology leads to even more weapons of mass destruction that man will not be able to control. God has brought mankind to this point in time in order to show him that if he did not intervene, man would indeed destroy himself. I think of what we're doing in the bio section of life, let alone weapons and some of the things that we're fooling around with. We fool around with things and we don't realize how something like that can quickly turn on us. We're messing with things we do not understand that can have a far-sweeping effect, and maybe some of those things will happen before this is all over with. Even as far as disease and sickness has spread quickly on the earth. And we miss around with things we don't understand, let alone with weapons we can't control, because man can't control himself, so he can't control the weapons. We got that conversation down there with the publicist. God, isn't it amazing? Only in the last 100 or so years have we seen technology rush forward like it has. God did keep it away from mankind until the very end, because it had to happen at a certain time because man couldn't deal with it. If it had been 1,000 years ago, man would be off the face of the earth by now. It had to happen at a specific time. Even the Tower of Babel, God confounded the languages because man was coming together too quickly. What do you say? Because man was coming together too quickly. So he confounded the languages. Amazing. All of a sudden, someone's talking gibberish to you, someone you knew, a neighbor or whatever, and they have to go on and live with someone else who's talking gibberish the same as them. You know, because they're the ones that can understand each other. So they migrated to different areas, some people did. Amazing. What's going on? Do you think the discoveries in the last century were just a matter of time and chance? Or can you indeed grasp that these things were hidden from man until our time, the end time? We now live at the time, the very time, when God is going to bring an end to man's ways and man's governments. But before he sends his son, the Messiah, to establish his kingdom to reign on the earth, God is going to humble mankind so that he will not continue to resist and fight against his way. Those who continue to fight against him will simply die. Amazing thing, brother. Even as I go back to and read some of these things, I marvel at the clearer picture God continues to give to us. You know, there are certain things you can read and believe and understand, and then there's a clearer picture as you go along that God actually gives to you of what's taking place, of where we are, and what an awesome time in which we live. Going on. God gave mankind free choice, and it is that very free moral agency that makes him different from the animal kingdom that functions by instinct, just as it was programmed to do from creation. The animal kingdom survives by the very instinct that God programmed into it, to respond to specific matters of nature in a specific way. Man is not so. He was not created in a robotic state, but was given a mind capable of free thought, creativity, memory, and thereby the ability to choose his own way. As a result of man's freedom of choice and base physical nature, he has turned inward to the way of get and selfishness. God is not that way. God is outward, caring for others, loving others without selfishness. God's plan was to allow man 6,000 years of self-rule to prove that he is incapable of ruling himself or others apart from the way of his Creator. Man has proven exactly that in the last 6,000 years. You know, brethren, we ought to really marvel at that, that God has a plan to allow the overwhelming majority of all mankind, just a few out of that, are going to be called and brought to a specific point in time, 144,000. But all the rest of mankind, God purposely left hands off for 6,000 years to let mankind live a physical life once, to live his own way. God has indeed left hands off and allowed mankind to have different governments and different religions. He revealed himself in part powerfully to certain individuals, less powerfully to peoples. I think of what happened on Mount Sinai, and the people couldn't take it, and they didn't want to hear. And it was a law they didn't like anyway, but it was too much for them. But even that, even being around some of that, you know, they would have become complacent in time because of the physical minds we have. Because without God's Spirit, we can't really perceive nor understand God and what God is doing. So I marvel that for 6,000 years, God has left hands off as a whole. He truly has. And only now is he really getting ready to reveal himself to mankind. He has not done so, and he's getting ready to do so, brother. He's coming to a point in time where he's going to have it in the ability and the mind of every individual on this earth to know there is God, that Jesus Christ is the King of Kings, that Jesus Christ is from God, and those who are with him and reigning with him are from God. There won't be any doubt in people's mind anymore like today in religion. You know, what do you believe and why do you believe and why so many different things out here? And so people are in mass confusion. What do you hold on to? So people come up with their own ideas, either something they hold on to because of how they've lived their lives, how their parents lived, and so they hold on to that religion, or they adopt certain things because they go to school and learn different things, whatever it might be, or they pick up a book and read something and maybe be persuaded to some other ideas. All the ideas of man nothing from God, because man won't accept that unless God calls him to it. God has to humble mankind. I marvel. I hope you do, brother, marvel at that process. Ready for page one, going on the next page. Now the time has come to humble mankind so that he can admit that the destructiveness of his own ways would end in annihilation if God did not intervene. That is why the advancement of technology in the last or the past century was no longer withheld from mankind to show what man would do with it once he was allowed to have access to it. Yes, God held it back until the end time in order to fulfill a full witness of the life of man over 6,000 years of history. Now the haughtiness and pride of man will be humbled by his Creator. The attitude of man will have changed once he has experienced the physical tribulation. Mankind will be ready to be delivered by God. He will be ready to receive the kingdom of God and the worldwide rule of Jesus Christ. Now we come back to discussing the two witnesses and this flow in the book here as a part of how God is going to fulfill his phase, this phase of his plan. Going on, God predetermined that there would be two witnesses to proclaim this end time message to the earth. God would give them power that will work to humble man. There has never been a time like this on earth. There was a time when God did send some plagues on the earth, on Egypt, during a time when the Israelites were in captivity there. God so humbled Egypt that they finally poured out all their riches upon the Israelites because they believed that if they did not get the Israelites out of their land, they would all be destroyed. Pharaoh's attitude is indicative of the world today. Pride and haughtiness fill the earth. And that's really hypocrisy, if you will, when we're talking about pride and haughtiness. But I want to stop there and consider some of that attitude that's in the world, brother, because it's greater today. It's in mankind because of technology, because of who we think we are in the world and how we see ourselves, the haughtiness of man and what we've come to as a people, and how far away man is from anything resembling what's true with God. Let's go back to Exodus chapter 7. I think it'd be a good exercise to go back in the Old Testament and take a look at some of those things that happened back there when God began to draw the Israelites out, had a purpose and a plan for drawing a nation out of Egypt. I know we read this story, especially around unleavened bread, and we marvel at how individual a ruler could be so stubborn, so hard-headed, and actually become more hardened as he went through this process. That's what's incredible, because pride is so powerful in the human mind that he actually became more hardened as they went along. And if you can understand that, you can understand what's happened to the church today. People have actually become more hardened in what they're doing, more resistant to what is true and what comes from God. That's why it's going to be so horribly difficult. Some, frankly, most will not even be able to accept it once God begins to make very clear to them what is true. They're just so hardened. And how about the world? How about people then, brother? Exodus 7, verse 19. I marvel that God can save us as human beings and bring us into his family. We ought to marvel at that. Exodus 7, verse 19. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, to say unto Aaron, take your rod and stretch out your hand upon the waters of Egypt, upon the streams, upon the rivers, and upon their ponds, and upon their pools of water, that they may become blood. And there may be blood throughout all the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and vessels of stone. So there wasn't going to be anything left that wouldn't have to be turned from water to blood. And Moses and Aaron did so, as the Eternal commanded. And he lifted up the rod and smote the waters that were in the river, in the sight of Pharaoh, and in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. And the fish that were in the river died, and the river stink. You know, can you imagine? They can't live in that. They can't breathe anymore in that. Whatever it was. We call it blood here, but, you know, they couldn't live in it, so they died. And then the stench, the smell of that. And the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments. So whatever thing they tried to fool and show, I mean, it was already turned, but they tried to show that they were able to do the same thing, obviously, a bunch of liars. But anyway, that's where the magicians are. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened, neither did he hearken unto them, as the Eternal had said. You would think if anyone was able to say, you know, look at this. All your water, everything you have to drink, is going to be turned to blood. Now, who can do that? Have they ever seen any of their gods do anything remotely like that? All the gods that they had in Egypt? Never. There's never been anything written about something so incredible. Yet they would not accept that this was from God. Anything that threatened them, their authority, their way of life, and I think about us as a people, anything that will threaten us as our way of life as a whole, people are going to resist, and they're going to become more hardened in how they do things and what they believe and what they want to hold on to. God has a job, brother, of humbling mankind. It is not a small thing. Mankind will not be humbled easily. There is no other way to bring God's kingdom than we go through the things we go through because of the hardness of man. And sometimes that's difficult for us to understand. I think of the interview sometimes when people don't grasp and you can't explain it to them quickly in any fashion or form. Why? They think it sounds like God is harsh. They don't realize, no, man is harsh and hard and refuses God, who wants to love them, who wants to bless them. But man has never listened. And so in order to give them blessings, in order to help them, just like for us, God has to chasten us mightily in order to bless us, in order to bring us into his family. We have to go through a lot of chastening, a lot of trials, a lot of hardship. It isn't easy because of what we are as human beings, just the way we are. Small thing. But isn't it an amazing thing to you how stubborn we are? And as human beings, there is no other way. I'm truly in awe of what God does and how he does it with us. And so, again, this is the beginning of Pharaoh's heart being hardened. Then the plague of frogs was sent, followed by dust turning into life. Well, can you imagine? Everywhere there's dust and the wind blowing, and all of a sudden, all the lice that would be all over your body? Yeah. How do you get rid of it? Well, you can't unless the plague's taken away. There's one thing to get lice in your hair, but to have it all over your body and it'd be so thick that you can't even begin to deal with it. Amazing. And so they had that come along, and then the swarm of flies. And, you know, because of the swarm of flies, we can't even begin to comprehend what that was like. You breathe. It's bad enough being in a swarm of gnats. Swarm of gnats, you know, they're flying in the air. Imagine swarms of flies, billions and billions and billions. Exodus 8, verse 28. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness. This was during the swarm of flies, and this is what he says, and we're breaking in there. That you may sacrifice to the eternal your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away. And basically, you know, intervene for me, you know, intervene for me. Ask God to help us to take this away. And Moses said, behold, I go out from you, and I will entreat the Eternal that the swarm of flies may depart from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people tomorrow. But let not Pharaoh deal deceitfully any more in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Eternal. Because he'd lied several times before now. And so Moses is warning him, don't lie again. Don't deal deceitfully and go against your word again. That's what people are going to do. When people come to a point of being humbled, and then they jump right back into what they were before. The stubbornness of the mind of man is incomprehensible, truly. Verse 30. And Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Lord, and the Eternal did according to the word of Moses, and he removed the swarm of flies from Pharaoh and from his servants and from his people, and there remained not one. Amazing, the power of God to do exactly what he said. And Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also, and neither would he let the people go. I remember years ago, you know, when we first started, the first time I ever heard this, and all through time, you know, in church, hearing the story and thinking about it, and never understanding it like we do today. Understanding that people are like that in society, in the world, in nations. This is the way all people are. Even in the scattered church, this is the mind of man. This is what we're dealing with. This is how strong pride is. This is what entered into Lucifer. The man must conquer and overcome by the power of God's Spirit. It is our only hope. You know, God's Spirit dealing with that kind of a mind. And so we have to experience it first to learn how bad it is, to learn how deep it is. And even after all these years of being in God's church, I feel like in the last few years I've only really begun to understand it far more deeply, to understand how deep-rooted it is in the human life. this thing of pride.
Going on. I want to read another verse in the external there, but I cannot but think of some things that two witnesses will do during the Great Tribulation. I'm just reading to you.
But just to remind you here of what it says in Revelation 11, verse 6.
Talking about two witnesses. These have power to shut heaven that it rain not in the days of their prophecy. You know, there's no rain. No rain. And have power over waters to turn them to blood. Sound familiar? I just read that. Who can do that but God? And to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. And they're going to do that for 3.5 years. We can't begin to comprehend that, what they're going to be doing, and how strong and how mighty that will be, and how it's going to take place. I was making a clearer picture of it as we go along, I guarantee you. I think especially of Israel, because they'll be around Israel for a little while. But it doesn't take very long, and Israel is no more, speaking of the modern-day nations of Israel. So what they say to them is not for a very long time as a whole, because they're brought down very quickly, and you're at the horizon. Who are they going to be talking? Who are they going to be talking to after this nation falls? Amazing. Amazing. What would be the purpose of still being here and doing some of those things? Well, there'll still be things being said, and there'll still be things happening, but a lot of it's going to be directed toward Europe after that, and toward Far East.
But amazing here, going on, back here in the Exodus, we'll go back to the attitude of Pharaoh. The plague of the flies was followed by a sickness of the animals. It was followed by a plague of boils and sores people had. And then God said, hail, notice this one now, starting in chapter 9 of Exodus, verse 22, chapter 9. And the Eternal said unto Moses, stretch forth your hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, upon man and upon beast and upon every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Eternal sent thunder and hail and fire, let alone upon the ground. And the Eternal rained hail upon the land of Egypt. Talk about something that was scary. This is powerful what took place here. It destroyed in a very great way everything that landed upon. Even imagine what it's talking about as far as fire, and so, you know, something that's coming from God. It's not normal, it's not natural. You know, how in the world would a loving man just, you know, reason that one away? Because they will try to reason things away, certain things in science, and why things happen, and they're going to have their hands full. Verse 24. So there was hail, and the fire mingled with the hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both of man and beast. Anything was caught out in it, you know, it died, it was killed, it was destroyed. And the hail smote every herb of the field and broke every tree in the field. When you look at it, when it was all said and done, there wasn't a whole lot left of Egypt. By the time the children of Israel were taken out, you can begin to imagine. Brother, can we imagine that this world has to go through things like that? That this nation and other nations are going to have to be humbled mightily before they'll begin to come to repentance on a more massive scale? That even Europe is going to fight to the very end, that they will not change over there? They'll be more like Pharaoh to the end. They will not change, because it's on the very last day that God intervenes and does what he does when he intervenes on them, upon them, on the seven last plague to report out. Going on, it sort of talks about what it is here, verse 26. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, was there no hail. And there are going to come time when God's going to intervene for his people and for those who even repent. There will be a distinction made as time goes along with various ones. Verse 27. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron, said unto them, I have sinned this time. The Eternal is righteous, and I and my people are wicked. Isn't that amazing? Look how much destruction there was, all the things he had to go through before finally he was pricked in the heart enough to say that. But he didn't hold on to it too long, but for a little while. Think of 9/11. It didn't last too long, did it? That's so typical. And that was small. But brother, it isn't going to be any different when it happens on a large scale.
It doesn't take man long to slip right back into the same old ways. The Eternal is righteous, and I and my people are wicked. Verse 28. Entreat the Eternal, for it is enough. Let there be no more mighty thunderings and hail, and I will let you go, and you shall stay no longer. And Moses said unto him, as soon as I am gone out of the city, I will spread abroad my hands in the Eternal, and the thunder shall cease, neither shall there be any more hail, that you may know how that the earth is the Eternal. And that's what's going to happen in the end here. That God is going to reveal himself very powerfully, slow, start revealing himself through these two individuals in a very powerful way, and he's getting ready to come. His kingdom is getting ready to come, and that these things are of him, and that he is all-powerful and almighty. Man can't do these things that are being spoken of. Chapter 9, verse 30, going on here. But as for you and your servants, I know that you will not yet fear the Eternal God. Isn't that amazing? There's going to come a time, brother, when, because we know human nature, that there will be things said undoubtedly so towards some others. But no matter what happens to them, that they're hard-hearted and they will not listen and they will not turn to God, even though they may for a little while say certain things like Pharaoh did, but they'll go right back against their word, which really will. Now, how do you think they're going to feel? How do you think they're going to feel? There's going to be hatred and stubbornness within them that's so deep, just like with Pharaoh. He had to cringe when he saw Moses and Aaron inside. It had to eat him up inside for him to even say these words. It didn't take him very long then. Again, he says, I know that you will not fear the Eternal your God. And the flax and the barley were smitten, for the barley was in the ear, and the flax was old. In other words, everything, those crops there by that hail and so forth, before destroyed. But the wheat and the rye were not smitten, for they were not grown up yet. So they were still young enough, they weren't grown up, so they were able to continue to go up, but those others had been fully destroyed. Verse 33, and Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh, and spread abroad his hands into the Eternal. And the thunders and hail ceased, and the rain was not poured out upon the earth. Verse 34, and when Pharaoh saw that the rain and the hail and the thunders were ceased, he sinned yet more, and hardened his heart, he and his servants. His servants, those who were around him. It took a long, long time. Verse 35, and the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, neither would he let the children of Israel go, as the Eternal had spoken by Moses. Let's go back to the book and continue on where we left off. But brother, those things ought to be deeper and better to understand that what happened there is going to happen again. But it's going to happen on a far greater scale, a far more massive scale than what happened in Egypt. In the middle of page 41, continuing. Pharaoh's attitude is indicative of the world today. Pride and haughtiness fill the earth. Everyone seems to know what is best. Even in something so minor as the world of sports, people argue over what should have been done or what would have been best. Our world is full of pride. Everyone believes that their way, their ideas, their religion, and their viewpoints are best. Isn't that amazing? Right up to the election, then after the election, this quarterbacking that takes place, what do they call it, Monday morning quarterbacking? It takes place and people, you know, the news is filled with it. I was, you think, man, it's over with. Let's get on. Get on with your life. Get alive. But they went back and they had to go over the elections and what different ones should have done and how they should have done this and that. You just get sickening, you know, no end to it. And what goes on in Iraq, all this quarterbacking that takes place. People have such great ideas. What happens in a murder case? What should have been done or shouldn't have been done, and what one lawyer did and one lawyer didn't, and what the judge does, and what would have been better, and blah, 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 blah. You know, it permeates our world, our society. Man, it's so haughty. Everyone thinks they have the best ideas. Turn on the TV this morning here a little bit, watching some news, and turn over to Fox, and they were going and talking about some economic things. But it was interesting. One individual was on for just a blurb. Because they were talking about the stock market and what was happening in the economy, and they were going back and forth, and not everybody was agreeing about different stocks, different corporations, and what was taking place there, but different ones kind of still trying to make certain areas look good, and what they felt like certain areas would have struggles in, but certain areas were good. And one guy got on there and said, basically, what we were doing, whether we raised taxes or didn't raise taxes, and what was coming, and what we've already done, that it's going to all catch us. And then they brought him to a quick end, and they didn't even go back to him. They didn't want to interview him.
Yeah.
Poor old Ben Stein. I think he was the one they were asking. And but what he had to say was right to the point. And if we're not careful, we're going to see the stock market go up a little bit and think, oh, things are starting to get a little better. They are not getting better. How many times have we seen this? How many times? I think back to that news watch a long time ago when we addressed some of those things and talked about what different countries were, what their stock indices were, and so forth. Some of them are far worse than they were back then. And we keep going up and down, back and forth. And we try to prop up them. They were talking about what was going to happen as far as interest rates rising and whether they did or whether they didn't. They were in trouble. They were talking about how much our currency is falling and the only way to ward that off is to raise interest. If that would help stop that. But they don't want to do that. Crazy, crazy world, brother. We are in bad, bad, bad shape. Our economy, the world economy. We are at the end. That's why it's going to stay in bad shape. Going on. Moving everyone seems to know what is best. Their viewpoints are best. Next paragraph. It's the same in politics. All politicians proclaim that their way, their ideas, and their policies are best. Nations cannot agree. With regard to the Middle East, every leader believes his idea offers the best solution for peace. But no one can give the people of the Middle East peace. None of today's leaders has the answer. And those standing on the sidelines, touting what they know, are just as ignorant as the rest, but with an added dose of pride. It doesn't matter, brethren, from those who have the greatest experience, who might have a little more insight, to the least, and sometimes even the least, who have less knowledge of what's really going on in the world in some cases like that. Their ideas are the best of what would be best for those countries, and not a best deal with them. And you think, how strong is our pride. Incredible. So we're now on page 42. Most newscasters reek of this vain, pride-filled spirit. They mold and fashion events into news, news as they see it, after their liking. If you cannot see this, then you have much to learn. I think of the difference between Fox and CNN, two opposing ways in one respect as far as the political leaning and so forth. And you think that they don't mold and fashion news, both of them? They do. God is going to break this vain attitude and haughty spirit of man before he establishes his kingdom on the earth. His two witnesses will play a major role in this. But from the very beginning of their work, the overwhelming majority of man will not believe they are sent from God. Instead, they will mock, ridicule, and hold them in disdain, and those who believe them. It took time, but even the Egyptians eventually began to believe that God was working through Aaron and Moses. At one point, God sent word to Pharaoh saying, and this is a quote from Exodus 9, verse 13, "Thus says the eternal God of the Hebrews, let my people go, that they may serve me. For I will at this time send all my plagues upon your very heart, and upon your servants, and upon your people, that you may know that." And the next time he wakes up, he's going to be a believer. He's going to look back and see what happened to him and the God he fought against all the way, and be humbled in a very powerful way. That's what happened when they resurrected from the dead. You're able to be humbled in a very great way if you will yield to it. If not, then that attitude will come out in time and you'll no longer exist for all eternity. Going on, God will once again send plagues upon the earth, coinciding with the very time when mankind is about to be plunged into World War III. The unrest and power at work on this earth are leading up to the emergence of two great military powers who will come against each other to engage in the greatest battle the earth has ever witnessed. God even identifies these two great powers, the one that emerges first upon the scene as an ancient resurrected power from Europe. Europe will rise again to thrust the world into a third world war. The power they unleash will result in the death of hundreds of millions of people. Oh, amazing. Again, here sitting there in that meeting and talking to them about the different resurrections of the Holy Roman Empire. And I tell you what, the one person there, one woman that was there in the meeting, she was very sobered by it. And she asked some very deep questions. And it wasn't until after a while that the one individual, the main man that works with me on some of these things, began to ask some questions. And I'm not sure he was really glad that he asked it afterwards, but they get their answers. And some people it changes and has an impact upon them, and others it doesn't. Because they just, so hard to believe. So, going on. This threat is a catalyst, speaking of what happens with Europe. This threat is a catalyst that pushes the Far East to unite more quickly than they otherwise would into stronger alliances than they would otherwise imagine. God specifically declares that this Asiatic power alone will destroy a third of all mankind, over 1 billion people. Brother, do you want to talk about the flood? That's what we're talking about. Worldwide destruction. And it just happens to be, this is where we live. I'm thinking about it this morning in prayer. Like, there's been 6,000 years of man on the earth, and we can live, man lives in a certain time, whatever that time is, and if you had a choice, which we don't, of when that time is, you know, we live and we die. That's the way of 6,000 years. You live and you die. And the history of man hasn't been a pretty picture over 6,000 years. So sooner or later, we all come to our end. It may be in a war. It may not be in a war. It may be in a struggle for just old age. And sometimes that can go on longer than a war. Because in a war, you may lose your life quickly and never know anything. Sometimes it's just a real fast way. I think sometimes when people get older in life, it's harder. And you can suffer a lot longer. So death is not a pretty sight. That's why God calls it an enemy. It is an enemy to mankind. It is an enemy to his plan. You know, it's one, the last one to be destroyed. Yeah. God's desire is to give us eternal life. So when would you want to live and die? Because you see, for 6,000 years, that's what's happened to man. Man has lived and died. And sometimes, again, death has not been a pretty sight. Whatever that death might be. Brother, what about when you know the truth and you live a certain way of life and you die because you oppose a certain way of life, and if you die because of that, there's no better way to die if you're going to die than serving God. And just because we happen to live at this time when the world is getting ready to go through what it's going to go through, it's not going to go through anything different than the world has gone through before. Man lives and man dies. It's going to happen on a more massive scale. So we truly, even as God's people, need to see this as a part of God's plan, and why it is this way. Because our tendency is to hold on to the last fiber of life, not to see anyone suffer, but see, we're just not exposed to some of that suffering sometimes. Someone's driving a car down the highway, and they have a wreck, and they go into a hospital, and they're suffering. There's some horrible things that take place in this life. People get cancer. And we suffer sometimes for a long time. We get different illnesses and sicknesses, and we suffer for a long time. It is a way of life and death. There's a cycle of life and death that God has given to mankind. And brother, what's taking place now is just an acceleration of many of those things on a very great scale. That's why sometimes when we think about the flood, it's hard for us to deal with. But you know, individually, when you deal with death, only if God's in the picture does he give you help and comfort. Only when God's plan is in the picture does he give you help and comfort. So on an individual scale, on an individual basis, it affects us differently. We all have to come into contact with it at different times in our life, even if it be our own. And we come to that point in time where we feel life ebbing away from us. It's not an exciting part of your life. It's a very difficult part of life. And it's difficult for those who are around who love you. So it's not a pleasant thing, this thing of life and death. But we need to understand what's getting ready to take place on a more massive scale on the earth. Man will live again. Just as everyone else who has lived and died in 6,000 years will live again. And so everyone you know, if God didn't intervene at this time, everyone you know is going to die. One way or another. It is the way of life and death. Isn't it? It's just that this is going to be accelerated at the end of 6,000 years more quickly on a more massive scale. Not pleasant, but death never is pleasant, brethren. When someone you love, and the person you love the most, dies. And if we really understand our human nature, we don't know that happens because we love ourselves the most. You know, suffering is not easy. But the one you love the most, it hurts deep. It can take years sometimes. And there are those things. I remember when my best friend was killed in Vietnam. I was 19, that's one of the things that happened to me. It was part of my conversion, part of God calling me. Because I had to address life and death. And I thought how unfair life was. That he was 19, was killed in the prime of his life, never was able to experience life with a family and children and so forth. And I was embittered about life and the unfairness of it all. And it cut deep. And years later, even after being in the church, I remember the first time one of the black wall that started moving down, what do they call it? Memorial, the Vietnam Memorial. They had the one in Washington, and they had the one that was made in the center of the country. I think the first one I ever saw was in Pennsylvania. That president, I was a minister. You know, cried like a baby. Going by and visiting it. You know, after all those years, and still thinking about some of those things, a close friend like that, and what had happened, and we're touched by things as human beings. And even when I went back several years later than that, still in Pennsylvania, lived there, and went to Washington, D.C., and actually saw the actual thing. You know, hit me again strong, like a ton of bricks. A lot of emotion, a lot of things hidden inside that I didn't know were there. And it just brings a lot of realities to life that sometimes we don't think about. So we're all touched by different things like that. None of us ever pleasant. We just happen to live at a specific time in life when many are going to lose it. If they're going to give it again, just like everyone else who's lived for 6,000 years, we have to see this as a part of God's plan. Because you know why? That's the way God sees it. It's a part of an overall plan. A part of finally bringing his kingdom to the earth, which is an awesomely beautiful, wonderful thing, brethren, to finally bring man to one government, to one way of life, to one religion, to where everyone will know that God is God, that Jesus Christ is the Son and the King of Kings, and they'll know that and believe that and love that. As a whole, that's the way human beings will feel as they come into the church. You know, millions all over the earth, and they're freed from Buddhism, Hinduism, Confucian, you know, Islam, traditional Christianity, the Catholic Church. Hey, they're going to be freed from it all the ignorance of Judaism, all the ignorance of different religions that are out there, and finally come to learn about God. The beautiful world is coming. We just don't get there easy. In 6,000 years, it's not that easy for man. Brethren, for us, we truly need to begin understanding this as a part of God's plan in a greater way, so we can go through this well. We need to go through it well. And we can go through it well. The better you understand this as a phase, as a part of God's plan, as a part of one step to another step, you'll embrace it. Because it's what's behind it that's exciting. It's the getting there and what's coming that's exciting. And then the great resurrection, finally, when everyone who's ever died, including those who have died at the very end here in an accelerated way, they get to be resurrected along with everyone else who died during 6,000 years. You know, it's not pleasant how you die when you die. It doesn't matter when it comes, does it? If we can understand and think that way, brother, it just isn't pleasant when it comes. It can happen to a baby. You know, right after they're born. How many of us in a situation like that? How many of us have had those experiences in our life? We have. It doesn't matter how it comes or when it comes. It's never easy, is it? So I hope we think about some of those things, brother, and understand what God has given us to taste of, to partake of. We've really been given so much, and sometimes it's hard for us to grasp. It's hard to grasp sometimes how awful it is that so many of us have been offered the first resurrection, and others have been offered safety, a safe way, safe travel, into New Orleans. Not going to be easy. Your whole life is not meant to be easy. And going through what's coming is not going to be easy. Not even for those who become a part of 144,000. It's going to be hard. Life is hard. It's just that it's accelerated in a very powerful, worldwide scale at the end. That's the only thing that makes life and death, at this time, different, isn't it? Don't you understand that? I think that needed to come out rather than to talk about some of those kinds of things. And as we grow, as we get closer to what's coming, we really do begin to see that in a greater way. I do. I have greater peace because of it. As I give some of the interviews, things become clearer and clearer of where we're going, why we're going there, what God is doing, how awesome it all is. And we have a bit of a taste of it, but we don't really grasp what's coming. We just have to experience it, brother. It's exciting. Hold on to it. And God will bring you through it. It sounds horrifying when we think about it now. And it will be a horrifying experience in one regard. But God's going to let you taste of the good that comes from that. As people repent and change, and you begin to see and understand more clearly what's behind it. I think of Stephen when he died, when he was stoned. Because he saw what he saw. He saw the glory of God. He saw God's plan in such a great way. It was so rich and so strong in his mind. That's what gave him strength. And God will give you strength to go through whatever's ahead. It's just that we live in that time. The time that I was... It's more the time I live to live in, brother. I hope you feel that way, or beginning to feel more and more that way if you don't, or if you haven't. Page 43. So this is the world and the time in which we now live. No one wants to believe it. No one wants to admit it's possible, but it will happen. This is not written to convince you that it will happen, but to simply tell you that it will happen exactly as stated. For those who will listen, the hope is that they will begin preparing for what is inevitable. This is a message that mankind will hate, and they'll hate the two who bring it. Some will try to kill them before their time, but they'll not succeed. That too is prophesied. Before this book reveals more of the specifics of end-time events culminating in the World War, more about these two witnesses must first be explained. Since they come on the scene first, before World War III erupts. You know, we need to think about some of the, even the time sequence of some of these things. You know, brother, my whole life right now, everything, and yours, is waiting for the first thunder. That's where we are. And sometimes waiting is tough. And then I remind myself of all the waiting different ones have done. Did it this morning? Abraham. And he didn't see it. Did he believe what God said about him and a nation that was to come out of him? And somewhere along the line, I'm sure that God gave him, you know, the knowledge and the knowing that it was going to be a long way up the line, because it takes a long time for generations and generations. I think when the children of Israel, went into Egypt, because they came up to Joseph, and they didn't even recognize their own brother. You want to talk about some awesome stories in the Bible. That is so incredible to hear someone taken into captivity becomes a great leader under Pharaoh in the land of Egypt. And so when the rest of the family came because of the drought that was taking place, and here is their own brother. And what God had intended for that family to become, a great nation, and how many years will be there, growing? 430 years to the day, doesn't it say? From when they went in to when they went out. It's hard for us to grasp 100 years. I can grasp 50-some, because I don't remember the first few very well. Little things here, maybe it went at 3, and we just don't remember things when we were first born, and it's all amazing. 430 years before there were enough people that God finally said, this is the time. They finally came to that point. We're going to bring a nation out and begin to work with a nation. Teach more lessons to mankind. Incredible, brother. Going on. God declares, and I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These two will prophesy of events that are coming, and the message will be reinforced by the power of God Almighty through signs and miracles, mostly in the form of plagues and control over weather. By this means, God will be revealing that those two are his witnesses and that it is the end time. The end of man's 6,000-year reign on earth. Awesome time as we live, brother. Because right after seven thunders are over with, then the seventh seal is opened up. So powerful. And it happens here in this country, in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, all the different places, the things that take place to bring them down before Europe will arrive, before Europe can arise, before Satan is let out of that pit and given power to reign over the Roman Empire. This is our life. Should search through us mightily, brother. Going on. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. Brother, I don't think we even grasp and even begin to understand what God is saying here. How strong, how powerful, of what he's talking about, of what takes place at the end of 6,000 years. Because God, with awesome power, is going to reveal to this earth that he is God and that his kingdom is about to come. Everything through the prophets, brother, points to this period of time we're getting ready to get through. All the stories of things, of man's time on the earth and an end of man's time and the beginning of a new world, of a kingdom that God is bringing, it is a most incredible story. And it's going to happen in such a powerful way. It is the most powerful thing ever to happen in 6,000 years. It pales everything else, brethren, making it small in comparison to what God is getting ready to do when his son is getting ready to come back. It's going to be powerful. And we don't grasp sometimes just how powerful that's going to be. And what God has just said here, it's written. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. Because this is such a momentous time, and because this momentous power is going to be unleashed upon the earth, a wave after wave after wave, even these two individuals, and saying what they say, is above and beyond other things that are written. It's above and beyond the seven thunders. It's above and beyond the seven things that take place as trumpets begin to blow in a very powerful way. And the first four that are unleashed upon this country and others. And then finally, the fifth, when Europe finally unites. How long down the road that is, we don't know. But for 3.5 years, incredibly powerful events take place. Going on here, these two do stand in an awesomely prominent position of power. They exercise power over the earth that no human beings have ever exercised before, not even remotely. Moses announced great plagues on Pharaoh in Egypt, but nothing in comparison to the magnitude of those things done by these two prophets.